with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Fifth day of a five-day broadcast week. Hurrah! Three cheers and a tiger for me. I have one. There'll be more of those in the future. Just some hanks and kinks in the schedule and stuff. There are things that you got to go out and do if you're going to walk the walk and talk the talk at the same time. I'm Bob. You are wonderful, you. It is Friday. And it's not just any Friday. It's Good Friday. Tomorrow, I suppose, is So-So Saturday, followed by Easter Sunday. And, of course, we all know the etymology of the word Easter, Aostra, Ishtar. If you really want to get in the spirit of the season and worship Ishtar as she was once worshipped, sometime on Sunday you will go to a local bordello, brothel, whatever, and have sex with a prostitute, because that's how you worshipped Ishtar back when this particular holiday was invented. Some 5, 6, or 7,000 years ago, in Babylon. You see, the temples had temple prostitutes, and they weren't just sitting around. That's how all churches have always had some sort, or all religions have always had some sort of money making scam. Temple prostitution was not all that unusual in the ancient world. One might go so far as to say it was downright common. And when one went to the temple of Ishtar, who also, I believe, was a goddess of the moon and had a hand in the brewing industry as well, if I recall correctly, one went to the temple of Ishtar and got a sacred hooker for however long it took to do whatever it is one does with a hooker. So celebrate this holy season, and by all means go out and have sex with a hooker and think about the divine. On the other hand, don't go out and have sex with divine. Ugh. Sorry, I mean, whichever way the wind blows for you, sex with divine, just we've seen the movies. Anyway, so it's Good Friday. Tomorrow is So-So Saturday. Easter is Sunday, and we have 3 hours of conversation radio before us, and I hope we'll make the most of it. It's Front Porch Friday here at the Horn. Come on up. Pull up a rocking chair. Jug's over there. The good stuff's in the one with the corn cob for a stopper there. It came off the still at about 160 proof after the second run. We've cut it with a little bit of branch water, but it'll still you'll still feel it in your toes. But pick up the banjo. Play a few runs, whatever. Take a swig. Cider, sweet cider's over there in the other jug that doesn't have the corn cob in it. And relax and let's enjoy some conversating on a beautiful spring Friday here in Appalachia, in what's left of almost heaven, West Virginia. So that's where we start. And listen, the last two nights, I have more or less started with this ad campaign from the freaks at the National Organization for Marriage. The National Organization for Marriage, you will remember, are the ones who have put out this really darkly disturbing, sick, twisted ad. You've heard it before. You're going to hear it again, just for the sake of a reminder. Because, hate has tentacles like a long-legged spider. and they have the ability to get into little nooks and crannies and crevices of our culture and spread poison. So here again, the National Organization for Marriage and their Dark Clouds audio.
There's a storm gathering.
The clouds are dark and the winds are strong.
And I am afraid.
Some who advocate for same-sex marriage have taken the issue far beyond same-sex couples.
They want to bring the issue into my life.
My freedom will be taken away.
That's enough of that. She's afraid her freedom's going to be taken away, and we've talked about what that freedom is. That is the freedom to hate that this rather bad actor wants to have. And I realized this morning that I would have to play this again when I read something that our buddy David in South Carolina had sent along. A story that was put out for people's consideration by the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, GLSEN. It is the story of a young boy. He is 11 years old. He is from Massachusetts. His name is Carl Joseph Walker Hoover. Now, wait a minute. Before we go any further, let's not end that stupid audio just yet.
I'm a California doctor who must choose between my faith and my job.
I'm part of a New Jersey church group punished by the government because we can't support same-sex marriage.
I'm a Massachusetts parent helplessly watching public schools teach my son that gay marriage is okay.
Okay, that's what I wanted. The Massachusetts parent helplessly watching while teachers tell her son that gay marriage is okay, when we all know it's sick, sick, disgusting, and twisted, and awful, and terrible, and it's breaking up heterosexual marriages all over the world. Right? A Massachusetts parent watching helplessly while her son is taught that gay marriage is okay. Because we can't have children being taught that gay marriage is okay. We can't have children being taught that being gay is just part of the panoply of human existence. Safe to say that Serdiner L. Walker, Carl Walker's mama, Carl Joseph Walker Hoover, I would submit, is probably wishing desperately right now that Massachusetts schools had been a little bit more forceful in teaching that it's okay to be gay. Because, you see, 11-year-old Carl Joseph Walker Hoover hanged himself this past Monday after enduring interminable bouts of bullying at his school, the New Leadership Charter School in Springfield, Mass. Carl Joseph Walker Hoover, 11 years old, would have been 12 7 days from now, did not identify as gay. He is a beautiful young African-American adolescent in the photo that I have of him wearing number 47 in a football uniform, his part of his team portrait. He has a beautiful smile. He has eyes that are alight with intelligence and curiosity. And he is dead. He is dead at the hands as surely as if they had braided the noose themselves of the National Organization for Marriage. He is dead at the hands of the Focus on the Family. He is dead at the hands of the Family Resource Council. He is...
dead at the hands of the American Family Association. He is dead at the hands of the moral majority. He is dead at the hands of the Family Research Council. Did I mention them twice? Maybe I did. Maybe they're twice as guilty. He is dead at the hands of the Mormon Church. He is dead at the hands of the Roman Catholic Church. He is dead at the hands of the Southern Baptist Church. And unlike the myth that is being promulgated over the next couple of days, he ain't getting up Sunday! Carl Joseph Walker Hoover's suicide was at least the fourth suicide of a middle school-aged child in the United States that has been linked to bullying this year. How much more?
And my job.
I'm part of a New Jersey church group punished by the government because we can't support same-sex marriage.
Were you hanged?
I am a Massachusetts parent, helplessly watching public schools teach my son that gay marriage is okay.
But some...
Sweet Jesus. Sweet, sweet Jesus. That California doctor. What is it that she says?
Who must choose between my faith and my job.
I'm... That actor. That revolting actor, repeating those revolting words. Would she have worked to save the life of Carl Joseph Walker Hoover? Bullied to the point of suicide? Had he been capable of receiving help? Carl Joseph Walker Hoover's mother went back to the school week after week after week after week, begging the school officials to please do something about the bullying of her precious son. They did nothing. Now, young Carl, as I said, did not identify as being gay. But the taunts of sissy and faggot rained down upon him like hateful rain day in and day out of his young existence. It is tough, as you all know, as you can all probably still remember. It is damn tough to go through puberty and be an adolescent. It is a time when one's peers are as cruel as at any other time, and perhaps more so, in one's life. The simple business of being a child is coming to an end. Puberty is taking its hormonal toll upon the body. And cruelty permitted is cruelty supported. Now again, Carl Joseph Walker Hoover did not identify as gay. That didn't stop the taunts. For children who do identify as LGBT, 9 out of 10 of them, that's 86.2%, almost 9 out of 10 report being verbally harassed at school in the past year because of their sexual orientation. Nearly half of them have been physically harassed and harangued. Nearly a quarter of them have been physically assaulted, battered. And of all of that evil, the vast majority of it goes unreported. Sixty percent of the LGBT students who were harassed or assaulted never said anything to their school officials. Mostly because they didn't think anything would be done. It would appear that from the case of Carl Joseph Walker Hoover, they are correct. Oh, and by the way, this is the new leadership charter school. Right-wingers love them some charter schools, don't they? Another way to try to break the back of the public school system. This means something to me, because if you are a regular to this program, you know that my beloved son has been subjected to much of this. My son was knocked to the ground and had his testicles stomped last year by little heathens screaming faggot. My son does not identify as gay. And he has had repeated run-ins in this year, and we have repeatedly begged that it stop. The little heathens who do it get maybe a 3-day suspension, and the next thing you know, they're back in school again doing it some more. Anything in middle school, in a pubescent, in an adolescent situation, anything can bring on the taunts. Having a better vocabulary than most of your classmates is almost a certain damnation for being gay. What's that line from Idiocracy? There you go with that fag talk we were talking about earlier. For simply using normal, respectable English. So what's the answer? What is the answer? How many times do you have to tell a kid to stop it? How many? I don't know. I'm at a loss. But there was an immediate line drawn for me this morning when I saw David's email alerting me to this story. There was an immediate line drawn between that young man's tragic end and the advertising being put out by miserable hate mongers like the National Organization for Marriage. It's unacceptable. And no amount of magic, as I said, is going to bring young Carl back. Dear sweet Jesus, he hanged himself. He reached a point of desperation where he did whatever he could do to make the pain end. Because the grown-ups wouldn't make the pain end. Because, you see, that's one of the problems that school administrators face, even in a so-called liberal state like Massachusetts. If they take action against little bullies and little thugs who like to hurl sexual epithets or gender identity epithets at other students, and they do anything about it, they will, as sure as God made little green apples and eating them will give you a bellyache, have the wrath of God, the hateful Old Testament, vengeful, juvenile, delinquent God called down upon them by family values organizations who will militate for those administrators to lose their jobs. They're taking away my constitutional rights to hate the queers because the Bible says to hate the queers!
It is a hell of a challenge and a hell of a question as to how exactly we do go about the business of dealing with this monstrous cruelty and the people who make it possible. We have talked about how Glenn Beck laughingly eggs his weak-minded followers on. What can you say about the Southern Baptist preacher or the Roman Catholic priest who rails against deviance and homosexuality from the pulpit? Being conscienceless, they don't see the connection, but you and I do. This is another one of those cases where silence is acceptance. Every time someone says something like this, every time you hear the words used, every time the hate suffuses itself into the air and you say nothing, it's a little more likely that another Carl will be found hanging at the end of another belt or another rope. 11 years old. Almost 12. And not a single grown-up could stand up for him for fear of the right wing in this country. Now, solutions. How do we fight this? Well, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network recommends 4 approaches. Point 1 is to adopt a comprehensive anti-bullying policy that enumerates categories such as race, gender, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, and gender expression identity. Enumeration, they say, is crucial to ensure that anti-bullying policies are effective for LGBT students. Policies without enumeration are no more effective than having no policy at all when it comes to anti-LGBT bullying and harassment. See, the Attorney General of West Virginia, I don't know about other states' attorneys general, but the Attorney General of West Virginia a few years back tried to put in place an anti-bullying policy in the schools of this state. And he was screamed down by the bigots of the West Virginia Family Association, who claimed that they have a constitutional right to encourage violence against 11-year-old little boys. That anti-bullying policy that had in it a ban on bullying based upon sexual orientation, that Attorney General's program was withdrawn from the schools. A few years later, my son gets stomped. Require staff trainings to enable school staff to identify and address anti-LGBT name-calling, bullying, and harassment effectively and in a timely manner. It's probably helpful. Support student efforts to address anti-LGBT bullying and harassment on campus. Things like a student-led Gay Straight Alliance, or the upcoming annual National Day of Silence on April 25th. You know, the right-wingers, the family values crowd, they tend to hold their children home from school on the National Day of Silence for fear that their children might learn that hate, based upon nothing more than mere perception, is wrong. Institute age-appropriate inclusive curricula to help students understand and respect difference within the school community and society as a whole. Well, you see what happens when someone tries to do that.
You get a fear-mongering ad with dark clouds and lightning bolts in the background and some paid actor saying, "I am a Massachusetts parent forced to watch helplessly as my little son is taught that gay marriage is okay." Who watches gleefully while someone else's little son is badgered into suicide by her little son screaming faggot and queer and fairy and sissy and homo and dyke, lesbo. You know, I've taken to calling what we do here activist radio. Because many of you have decided to take up some causes, a cause, and it fills me with pride. Might it be worth your time? Maybe come Monday. Might it be worth your time to call your county school board and ask them if they have a comprehensive, enumerated anti-bullying policy? Might it be worth your time to perhaps save the life of another Carl Joseph Walker Hoover? Might it be worth your time? Might it be worth your time to let your school board know that you are unwilling to stand idly by in silence while the next tragedy unfolds? Is it worth the time it would take you to go to a school board meeting and ask why such a policy has been in place? Is it worth your time to go to that meeting and pass out little flyers with the story of Carl Joseph Walker Hoover or Lawrence King, who was shot and killed by another student in a California classroom last year? Eighth grader Lawrence King. Is that worth it to you? Simple query. You may never know the effect of what you do. It is hard to know a negative. You may never know whether a child is saved . But the contrary to that is that if you do nothing and something happens in one of your schools, you will find yourself looking down at the blood on your hands. That's all there is to it. Simple act, pick up phone, make phone calls. Simple act, take a little tiny fraction of the time of your life upon this sweet little blue-green marble time machine hurtling through the universe to go to a school board meeting and ask questions versus questions you do not want to have to answer for yourself. At least that's how I see it. Sorry to start on a down note. I guess I've done it again. But I got to tell you, the story shook me all the way to my feet when I saw it this morning and realized what we've been talking about for the last 2 days on this program. And I realized we had to connect the dots. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, God.
Hey, Susan.
What these people deserve to have done is nothing violent. But the parents of these children that did that bullied this child, that they these children, these bullies, that's where they picked it up. The parents and the people that the parents picked it up from, they deserve to be followed for the rest of their life by crowds of people whispering and never stopping. Whispering.
But they won't be.
And over and over again with the word murderer, murderer, child killer, child killer, child killer.
They deserve it. But it won't happen. But it won't happen.
No, it won't happen. And it certainly won't bring that baby back. Perhaps if there's a karma. Yeah, there's a karma that will. God damn. But like you said, the school boards is a good idea. I will do that Monday. And it's a pretty good bet that that poor boy wasn't LGBT. He wasn't gay.
No, he wasn't.
He was just probably a little bit on the small side because bullies don't go for the big kids.
Or maybe he spoke good English.
Yeah, and he was a little bit different because if you're in school, different is dead. I've been there, done that. And his parents taught him. They taught him disobedience. Those kids, those bullies, they were taught.
Sure. Yeah, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. And here's the sickest part of it, and on Good Friday it seems appropriate to discuss this, Susan. We know from that stupid little ad, we know from the Mormon Church, we know from the conduct of the Roman Catholic Church, we know from the conduct of the Southern Baptist Church, we know that this is, you know, this isn't just, it's not just learned behavior, it's taught behavior, and it is taught!
Taught in church!
In churches that worship the Prince of Peace. How would you like to be the Southern Baptist minister? And yes, they do exist in the North. How would you like to be the Southern Baptist minister in Springfield, Massachusetts, who has inveighed against the homosexual agenda from his pulpit time after time after time with little future haranguers and tormentors and bullies sitting in the pulpits soaking up his every word?
And that's another.
But those preachers have no conscience, you see, Susan.
Yeah. That's another thing that people should be doing. Don't go for the preachers because we all know they have no conscience. Go for the congregations. Put flyers on, if you can manage it and you can afford it, make up flyers with this kid's face on it and say, this kid died because of this church. He wasn't gay.
You know, I don't care who the leader is. Dr. Dickland in the Southern Baptist Convention, he's got some of this.
Yeah.
Pope Benedict the 16th has some of this.
All of them. And Rick Warren and all of them. They all.
Pastor John Starve Hagee has some of this. Yeah. Remember, Hurricane Katrina was sent to wipe out the queers in New Orleans?
Yeah, they all have it. Look on your hands, you motherless.
Yeah, I know.
And
the other three known cases among middle school students, suicides, Chatham, Evanston, and Chicago, Illinois, all in the month of February.
Yeah. I have a question for these right wingers. I know it's not going to get answered by them because they won't ever think to answer it. They won't allow themselves to answer it. They say being homosexual is a choice. Who in their right mind is going to choose that kind of a life?
Sure. You know, I learned so much over the course of the year that Peter Godbold brought us his program.
I have gay relatives. I have gay friends. Who in their right mind would want to go through what they have had to live through just to exist in this society? They don't have a choice. They are the way they are, simply the way my eyes are green, or I'm right-handed, or you're left-handed, or whatever. You're born that way. Because nobody wants to live through this.
Not in this culture, no.
No, not in this culture. This is insanity.
Carl's mother said to the newspaper, and this is a quote, "If anything can come of this, it's that another child doesn't have to suffer like this, and there can be some justice for some other child."
Yeah.
"I don't want any other parent to go through this."
Yeah. His poor mother. And I blame also the school, because they should have had guts to stand up to those people. And they didn't have the balls. And when are you going to learn? Which is more precious, that little child, that 11-year-old who has his whole life ahead of him, or these cynical monsters? Give me that child every time. What's that line in the Bible?
Well, see, what drives me crazy, suffer the children to come unto me? Is that where
yeah.
you were going?
Yeah.
What drives me nuts is that the right wing is so they get so wrought up about fetuses and frozen embryos yeah. and stem cells and the like. And one of the things they love to say is, one of those aborted babies may have cured cancer.
Well, that little 11-year-old
may have cured cancer, too.
Have discovered a warp drive. Discovered an AIDS vaccine, you never know. But it sure ain't going to happen now. And there's a little offshoot of this. It kind of ties into it, kind of tangentially. I finally managed to listen to the podcast for prayer meeting. And you were talking about the religious images being destroyed. Now, you read a lot of science fiction. Science fiction is built on fact. That's what makes it good. When Genghis Khan came roaring through out of the steppes of Russia and conquered half of the planet, he was the only one who managed to hold on to Afghanistan. What was the one reason he managed to do it?
He left it in the care and keeping of the people who lived there, for the most part.
But more importantly, he recognized a very simple fact. You can oppress people, you can kill people, you can slaughter them, you can do anything to them, as long as you do one thing. You leave their gods alone.
Yeah, you do.
And by stepping in and destroying those, oh, they've stepped in it big time. And this is just an offshoot of this whole, it's another part of it.
It certainly is.
Yeah. This country rocked, bebopped along just fine. Until we started letting religion getting involved. Jefferson was right.
Yep. Adams was right. George Washington was right.
And this country is in really, really deep shit because of this one thing. The wall between religion and government has come down.
And yet, at the same time, I saw an article earlier today in which James Dobson admits that they are defeated. that the right wing was doing was carrying out a holding act, an attempt to holding action,
mm-hmm.
and that they have lost the so-called culture wars. Pardon my skepticism. It comes from the Telegraph of the UK. And it says, James Dobson, 72, who recently resigned as head of Focus on the Family, one of the largest Christian groups in the U.S., Christian, my rear end, and once denounced the Harry Potter books as witchcraft. Didn't he also go after SpongeBob?
Yeah.
He said, "We tried to defend the unborn child, the dignity of the family, but it was a holding action. We are awash in evil, and the battle is still to be waged. We are right now in the most discouraging period of that long conflict. Humanly speaking, we can say we have lost all those battles." I don't know, Susan. Did James Dobson lose that battle?
No.
Or did young Carl lose that battle?
Yeah, Carl lost it. He's just holding, you know, stepping back and gaining his second wind. But in the process, he's done dreadful damage to the Constitution of this country.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Now, on a lighter note, the hoorah about ASU.
Yes. His life's work is still ahead of him.
Yeah, well, there is a comment from somebody on Huffington Post who had just got off the phone to the media relations department at ASU. And it turns out that ASU's President Crow was the one that wrote that press release, you know.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And the...
His first name wouldn't be Jim, would it?
I'm not sure. Although it would be funny. I got the joke, by the way. And
knew you
the
did.
Thing was, yeah, and yes, Jim Crow. And then the thing was, dear President Crow attached this media person's name, Sharon Keeler's name to it. She never saw it, knew nothing about it, didn't write it, or let alone approve it for release. And then now his office is directing all the calls from the media back to her, and he's taking no calls.
Just like the cable company, when it goes to fuzz, they just take the phone off the hook for a while.
Yeah, basically. But it's typical right winger politics. Personally, I think I hope he goes down there, gives a barn burner of a speech, smiles graciously at what's his face, doesn't shake his hand, assuming they decide after the fact to give him an honorary degree. I hope he declines it, says thank you for inviting me, and then leaves.
No, okay, well, let me take you another step further. There is a profound rivalry between Arizona State and the University of Arizona. I would guess that there will be an honorary degree tendered from the University of Arizona long before Arizona State can ever get its act together to do anything else.
Yeah, and then accept the one from Arizona State. This is just so funny. It's comic relief.
Yeah. And I did notice, however, that they gave an honorary degree to a guy who went on to give them $50 million to build their school of business and named the school of business after him.
Yeah. And they gave an honorary degree to the first woman prime minister of Canada and the first black, it was either first black mayor or first black governor in the United States. But they didn't. Yeah. not the president. You know, he's just not good enough. You know, I sit here and look at that, and then I just snicker.
Well, it's just, it's so silly.
Walker insinuates Levi Johnson commits incest with his sister. Oh, my.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, so the smear, so the Godzilla from Wasilla has cranked up the smear machine now.
Yeah.
Anything there?
Let's see here, real quick here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
It's got to be something from The Onion.
No. Okay. Oh, and speaking of decrying foolishness, Erickson goes right off the rails in his perfect criticism of all things Levi, accompanying a picture of Johnston and his sister is the following paragraph. What's even more creepy is that the other person in the picture is his sister. And as if lifted from the pages of Deliverance, she has his name tattooed on her back finger. Think about that for 1 minute.
Didn't even take a minute. Didn't even take a minute.
Oh, God.
Well, Susan, you have yourself a good, pagan version of Easter weekend.
Yes, well, blessed be to everyone who is celebrating either Passover or Easter. And
I guess the vernal equinox was the big pagan holiday, was it not? What is that
spring
called?
Spring solstice, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes, spring solstice. I'm sorry, not the vernal equinox.
we all have our.
Yeah, vernal equinox. It was the vernal. Yeah, yeah. What is well? What is the spring thing? I know Samhain's in the fall.
I just went blank. I think. Oh God, this is embarrassing. I just went totally blank, and it's my religion.
Yeah, that's like asking a Southern Baptist who their patron missionary is and forgetting the name of Lottie Moon.
Hold on a sec. I'm pretty sure I know what it is, but I'm checking.
Does it start with a B? It's not that. I guess it's not that important, but.
Beltane.
Beltane. There. See. Yeah. Hey. Well, at least I saved the cell that had the first letter on it. So you know, hurrah for me. Well, at any rate, have a good weekend and give our best to Donald, and we'll talk soon.
Well. Love to Agnes, and tell Ferg, hang in there. The horrors do not last past high school.
Well, he started dealing with it.
He can live through it. I know, because I...
Yeah, he throws punches now.
Good for him. Bullies are basically cowards. But
kid threw a haymaker at him the other day. He ducked and came up and clocked the kid in the side of the head and hadn't had a problem since.
Good for him. The one thing, I have never, ever been to a high school reunion because my whole school experience was such a horrendous mess. I refuse to have anything to do with that period of my life.
So,
bad.
Painful.
Yeah, I was one of those people that was in the 60s. Girls were not supposed to be smart. They were supposed to be wives. And they were supposed to allow the guys to look smart. And I said, crap on that.
Indeed. Well, Susan, take care.
Okay. Love everybody.
All right. Bye now. Bye. And we will move on to some other stories as the evening progresses. But for now, it's about 10 minutes before the hour, and we have talked a little bit about Ishtar, Astra, Easter, I've got a favorite Easter song, and I'm going to run it. And we'll be back with your phone calls or my stories or my rantings, ravings, whatever you care to call them. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll-free. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck, it's 304-658-3333. If you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan, do not pauperize yourself. We can carry the weight of that phone call if you need us to. But it is the last live conversation on the horn until Sunday night at 9 p.m., so you got to just bottle it all up inside. Get up here on the front porch and let's jaw a little bit. We'll be back. Don't let the atonal strings put you off.
Some rolls around, chocolate nipple brown. Don't move from your arms, like the ground your breasts swell. And awake from sleep, hairs will kick and leap. Flowers climb erect, smiling from the moist kiss of her rainbow mind.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Belated congratulations to Ward Churchill. He's the guy who was kicked out of his job as a tenured professor at the University of Colorado after he made some inflammatory remarks about 9/11. I myself thought his little Eichmann's reference to the people in the Twin Towers was tasteless and inaccurate, to say nothing of insensitive, but I also thought he made some solid points in that controversial essay. And at bottom, I firmly believe that no professor should be fired for speaking out in public. Oh, the administrators didn't say that's why they were tossing him overboard. No, they found other pretexts. But it seemed pretty clear all along that his political views sparked their hunt for academic indiscretions they could drown him in. And a jury agreed last week, ruling that Churchill was wrongfully dismissed. This is a triumph for academic freedom and for free speech. If he'd lost, college campuses could be chillier places as a result. Ward Churchill should be praised. He could have walked away and not put up a fight. He could have cut a deal with the university and taken the money and run. But instead, he stood his ground, and good for him, and good for us. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
For those of you who might be curious, the song on the way into the top of the hour, a particular favorite of mine, from the XTC album Apple Venus Part 1, which I find just wonderful start to finish. Apple Venus Part 1 from 1999 by XTC. That track was called Easter Theater. Look at the lyrics. They're just, wow, XTC writes some smart, smart stuff. So let's, again, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. And for those who have asked the question, yes, I'm working on getting Skype reinstalled. I think I can do it in such a way that you can dial in, especially overseas listeners, and participate in the program a little bit more efficiently and a lot less costlyly. New word? I don't know. Well, it's Easter. Things get reborn. Costlyly. At any rate, let's go to the phones now. The line's open if you want to jump in.
This is, after all, Front Porch Friday. So have a blast and make the best of it. Hey, Bob.
It's Front Porch Friday. Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm.
Pull up a rocking chair, grab the jug, take a swig, whatever.
Nah. No. I'm looking out my front porch window. Oh, used to be a porch. Now it's a big window. I got one of them, what do you call them, picture windows?
Yeah.
And I can look out on my front yard and across the prairie, and I can see a long way here, Bob. I can see a long way. And, you know, the funniest thing that you just, you know, you said some things tonight that hit home, you know? It just hits home. A child, a young man that had no idea what sexuality even was.
Yep.
Took his own life. And people or peeps or whatever you want to call them on the internet, they have no concept of what it's like to be a child being battered or a battering parent that has been battered before. You know, the wonderful thing is, Bob, is that there are a few of us, and maybe it's growing, I don't know, out here that don't give a hoot at whether you have same-sex marriages or opposite-sex marriages. Bob, I've been married for 40-plus years here, okay?
Yeah.
And guess what? No person of same sex has ever come between myself and my spouse. Not once. Okay? I mean, she doesn't have a girlfriend. I don't have a boyfriend. You know what I mean?
Yeah, kind of difficult to have that happen, isn't it?
Yeah. When you love somebody and care about them, you just love that person. And that person loves you, or they get tired of you and move on. But that's their business and not yours. See what I mean?
Yes.
And then you live with the pain. But the thing is, people have called me lots of things. The truth is, I have taken human life. I have killed human beings in the name of my country, and I've done it proficiently, as our young Marines and airmen, sailors and Army have done for these past, what is it now, 7 years? It's getting on 7, is it not?
Well, it depends. If you're Afghanistan, 8. Afghanistan will be 8 this fall, and Iraq just turned the tender age of 6.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but 8-year-old and 6-year-old war, you know, we had Hitler licked in that time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not we, us and the Russians and the British and the French and the Australians and... and all the various and sundry undergrounds and resistance movements, they had them licked.
That's right, Bob. And the sadness is this, that so many people forget their history. They forget how this nation came to be. And then they forget how they came to be, okay? And then they find themselves in this quandary that we're in right now. We worry about what? Whether your credit card will fail, you know, whether the bank that's holding your debt will go under and take you with them. We're worried about what? Money? Money? Just that fictitious piece of paper that you take to the grocery store to get some vegetables and meat so you can make a whatever. We worry and fret and just don't understand what you did earlier on this evening when you brought home, you brought it to the home of every human being that was listening, the suffering of a child under the jackboot of a bully, of another bully. It wasn't a George Bush bully. It was just the one on the schoolyard. So when? Please, dear God, Bob, tell me, when will you people stand and just say, that's enough? I've had enough, and I will not stand for that kind of treatment of another child in my nation, on my planet. When will you stand and say, that's enough? You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because I did it right here in District 8, the western part of North Dakota, and I said, that's enough. People, listen. That's enough. You cannot call a child or any other human being by that name. And if you try, I will sue you to the last dollar that you have in your pocket. I'll take it, and I'll take it like I own it. I don't want it. I don't need it. I got enough. But I'll take everything you got if you want to do that to my son. And guess what? They didn't do it to William. They'll never try again because I said enough. And I stood. And you stand like you should and say, that's enough, people. Either you, not me, you, because I've taken my stand. I don't care if they are gay, if they are bisexual, if they are whatever, but I will not tolerate bullying from anybody because I can be the biggest bully on the block. But I don't want to be, Bob. I'd rather hand you a hug and a kiss and say thank you, my friend, because we, you and I, same kind of heart. You understand what I'm saying, and so does every other human being on this planet. Every other human being understands if you care about somebody and you love them, not because you know them, but because they're your neighbor. They're the person that lives down the block. You don't have to take from them. You don't have to threaten them. All you have to do is care about them. And I care about this. Oh, my God, Pop, you broke my heart. I heard that. I said, oh, my God, that poor child, that poor young man, he never even knew what he was. He never knew whether he was gay or straight. He had no idea. But he was drummed into taking his own life by a bunch of what?
Bullies? Thugs?
Self-righteous individuals that think they...
Yeah, I don't know for sure. Yeah, Bob, I don't know for sure that those boys, the bullies, I don't know that they're in church on Sundays, but I'd wager decent money on it. I don't have a lot of money, but what I'd put 20 bucks on it.
Yeah, I'll throw you 100 next week. Okay? But the thing is, Bob, it's just that simple. You can't. And I know, hey, I love these folks that come into the chat room. I love them with my whole being, Bob. I care about them. I wish the heck I could just, you know, sit down with you guys and have a cup of coffee. But the problem is we are so doggone spread out. You know, those of us that really give a hoot don't really stand up and say, that's enough. And I've done it. I know how easy it is. You just look them in the eye and say, stop it. That's enough. Tell Hannity. Tell, what's his name, Rush Limbaugh, or Flem Glob, or whatever he is. That's enough. We don't want to hear your garbage anymore. And stop the bullying in the schoolyards and on the mainstream media.
And in our body politic. Hear, hear, Bob. Hear, hear.
Thank you. and eight. Like everybody says, love the egg. But this one is from Glenda, okay?
And I will make sure she knows that.
She misses her. Oh, God. That's one grandma to another grandma. Okay.
And grandmas know how busy grandmas stay, don't they?
Yeah, they do. She's still out there. But, hey, love you guys. Keep up the good work. Just keep it up. And, Bob, you did such a dang nabbit good job when you started tonight. Just keep hammering it home. They got to listen until it comes to their house. And then when it's in their house, it's home. Like, hey, I feel like I know you. I feel like I've known you all my life. And I care.
Thank you, Bob. That means the world.
Thank you.
Take care and have a peaceful weekend, my friend.
Oh, hey. I'm going to get me an Easter Bunny.
Oh, I saw the greatest cartoon. Had two chocolate Easter Bunnies. One of them had had its little cottontail bit off of it, and the other one had its ears bit off of it. The one with no bottom was saying, "My ass hurts." And the one with no ears was saying, "Huh?"
Huh? Hey.
Probably doesn't translate when you tell it, but it was a cute cartoon.
No, I can see it in my mind. I think I thought of it long before it was ever said.
take care, Bob, and give our best to Glenda.
I'll do that. And William too. He sends his love, and I send mine over to this radio station out to the world. Just stand against it and say no more, no more. It's enough. We will not stand for it. We will stand against you, and we will fight you on the beaches. Okay, I'm getting...
All right. Time for supper, Bob.
Yeah, love you too.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good buddy Bob on the high plains of North Dakota. All right, let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hello.
It's Ange.
Hey, Ange, how are you, dear?
I'm good. I just, life has hectic and stuff. And I've been wanting to call in for the last couple of weeks, but the night that I'm available, you haven't been there.
Well, I've been missing a little bit lately.
Thing and
a little good. Tied up, a little road weary, a little saddle sore.
Yeah, that's good. And I tried to do that thing that you and Luke were talking about the other night by writing my topics down so I know.
Sometimes they don't want to behave, Ange.
Well, I know. I opened my topic notes up, and it kind of looks like a crazy ADD sort of poem.
Oh, it sounds like me.
It does, but...
Poetry by Salvador Dali or something, yeah.
yeah, kind of like that. Okay, I'm just going to start out with, with Sue and Bob and everybody else that's called in thus far tonight that I've heard about the gay, LGB sort of thing. And I think most of it has to do with your parents and how your parents bring you up.
Oh, sure.
Because, I was like in the fourth or fifth grade when I first learned about gay and lesbians. Fourth or fifth grade, I had this little black and white TV, and I was watching some movie, and it was about two lesbians that was on one of the three or four channels that we got back in the 70s. And my mom...
You must have grown up next door to me.
Yeah, but and my mom comes in, she's like, "What movie?" And I was kind of watching it, but I was doing my own thing in my room and stuff. And I told her, and she's like, and she explained it to me. She goes, "Okay, two lesbians or homosexuals that either two men or two women that speak with each other, like you and your father do, and live with each other. And it doesn't mean they're bad.
Good on your mama.
And some of them are bad, just like everyone else. Just like everyone else is good and bad. And, you know, and this is like everything. Religion is good and bad. People that believe in different sorts of religion, there's good and bad in all different sorts of races. There's good and bad in everything.
That must have been that early. That must have been that early '70s sitcom, Bridget Loves Betty. No, that was Bridget Loves Bernie. Never, no.
No, I don't remember that one. I didn't watch TV much.
Yeah, I'm teasing.
Other than, you know, like the Saturday morning, you know, like Lost in Space.
Oh yeah, well, you know, Warner Brothers cartoons are forever seared into my brain, Angela.
You know, Johnny Sacco and all the cartoons, of course.
Johnny Quest. Yeah.
No, Johnny Sacco.
No, but I'm talking about, that just took me to Johnny Quest. And run, Bandit, run!
Yeah, I remember Johnny Quest, too. But, it has to do with people bringing up children the right way and knowing how to do it.
Well, sure it does. And what you see, and knowing that you are from Arkansas, and you don't mind people knowing that, and me being in West Virginia.
But I was born and raised in pretty much downtown Kansas City. I lived there for 22 years of my life.
Oh, okay. But no, I was gonna make a larger point, Ange, and that is, you and I both right now live in places where religious fundamentalism is the mainstream, which is kind of weird to even contemplate, but. What you have is, we've got churches around here that endorse that goofy verse somewhere in Philippians or Flip-Floppians or something that says, wives, submit unto thy husbands. And what you wind up having are so-called Christian homes that are nothing but sexist bully fests. And it is learned in the home. That bullying is learned in the home.
And it's not only just in the Southern.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and you know, and when I, about bullying and stuff, and kids getting beat up, and just when I lived in the city in the 80s, when I went to high school, I had one of my good friends that was gay in high school, got the shit beat out of him by his father. I mean, he should have called safe. And my mother let him stay with us for a while because we couldn't go back. You know, even though we had a tiny little house with three bedrooms with six people, one bathroom, you know, my mom let him stay because it's a whore to do that to your own child. I mean, you know, nonetheless, beating anybody up that's not even a relative, it's horrible. But it starts with parenting. You know, that his father wasn't raised or didn't have, you know, a good foundation to what life is all about.
Absolutely. Yeah, ignorance breeds it, and then, you know, again, the religion industry breeds it.
Yes. And it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. When, you know, something happened to me a week and a half ago. All right. And it was about a week after that 11-year-old kid did his thing on your show.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was coming home from work, and in my little apartment my big apartment complex, because I live right close to the university. And this little girl that I've known for the four years I've lived here, comes up to me and, you know, says hi, because I talk to, you know, some of the people I know around here. And she comes up to me, and she's like 11 or 12. She looks younger, but, and she's talking to me, and she's like, are you going to the tea party? And I'm like,
oh, Lord.
And I said, what? Oh, it's up on the square, April 15th. And then she goes on, do you like Obama? I'm like, yes. Well, we don't. And I said, well, why? He hasn't even been given a chance. Well, my parents are all into Glenn Beck, And then I kind of figured out what the Tea Party was after she said that. And she goes, what do you think of Glenn Beck? And I said, I think he's a nutcase. And that's all I said because I see her parents out there, and I don't want them harassing me. But and just like, oh, my God, it reminds me of the, you know, the 11-year-old kid is being kind of probably coerced by an older person on the, on that show that one night. That
sure. Had. Yeah. It's a form of child abuse.
What this Tea Party thing is, we're going to have one up here, and I wish that I could get more people that listen to the horn from this area to go with me, and we can, like, you know, do a little.
Oh, dress it, dress again. I've been suggesting that if it's at all humanly possible, dress up. You know, you could do the Alice in Wonderland thing. You'd look good as Alice, and find somebody who could be the March Hare, and somebody could be the Mad Hatter, and have the Mad Hatter's Tea Party at the Tea Party.
Yeah, I heard that. Okay, I heard that episode. Yeah, I just need more people, but
I need the costumes.
Yeah. Costumes? I probably could scratch something up for that, but I might kind of be a dark Alice, but.
But Alice is pretty dark. Alice can be pretty dark anyway, so.
Yeah, I think Alice doesn't have to be, you know, a little blonde-headed girl.
There's nothing that says that has to necessarily be the case. Alice could be a little 19th century goth chick.
Oh, yeah. See, that's more my style. But I'm trying to read these topics here because I wanted to say something else. But, oh, I see this thing on the news. The other day, the local news here about they're going to try to start, I guess, some kind of wind project here in Arkansas.
That would be nice. Y'all have some nice mountains down there that could support wind.
Yeah, even though they're fixing to build in 2012 or 2011 another coal-fired power plant here. It's in near Texarkana. But what's that guy's name? That Pickett? I can't remember his name. Pickety?
Oh, T. Boone Pickens?
The wind power guy?
Well, he's kind of, but not really.
All right.
I
saw him on the news. It was probably about 4 or 5 days ago, local news. And they're talking about a wind project here in Arkansas, which is really good because I've been writing to, like, you know, the Congress people here, Senator, you know, everything about, you know, the wind and no coal plants and this and that. You know, but I never get emails back. Or if I do, it's like the general thing that they email everybody. You know, it's a bunch of bull, like from Hebe and some of those people here in Arkansas. But, you know, and I try to do my part. Renee Louise can be proud because even though people, you know, just like you said, people don't have a lot of time, but if you know their sources, you can look it up and find out. Like, for instance, the Sierra Club. If you go to the Sierra Club and then go to your state in the Sierra Club, there, I know in Arkansas, you can go to it, and there's, like, petitions that you can sign and send to other people in your state for this sort of thing. So anybody out there, if, you know, you don't have a lot of time to do research, to write letters, or, you know, et cetera, you can go the Sierra Club, they have a lot of petitions for your state there. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Bob?
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay. But, and we all, you know, do our little thing, even though we don't, and I know I don't post a lot on that Head On Radio blog, I don't think I ever posted. I just made my profile, and that's it. But because people are busy, like you said, you do your thing, all the stuff that you do, and, you know, it's like most people like me, I have a full-time job. I have to sleep. I have other things in my life.
Yep.
You know, and it's like I can't find all the time that I want to do the things that I want. And I think everybody that listens to this station, you know, does everything they can with the time they have and the knowledge that they do have. So, okay, that's for you, Renee Louise. I love her, too.
I do, too.
I love when she calls up. She has so much passion. most definitely. But, okay, let me look here. Was there anything else? I don't know. It's such a muddled mess. It looks like about 3 pages.
Yeah, but, you know, if you keep working on it, Ange, it'll eventually turn into a really awesome haiku or series of them.
Yeah.
Just remember, 575.
Yeah, okay, here's one. Get out of the mindset of the old and tired and get with the new and progressive. Thoughts of the smart actions.
That is poetry. Okay. That's halfway to being a lyric.
Yeah, I have all kinds of stuff like that in here in these notes. I could probably go on and give you inspiration. But I'm going to get off so someone else can call in.
Okay.
But that's all I'll have for now.
Well, it's wonderful talking to you, and I look forward to our next opportunity to chat, and you have a wonderful weekend.
Hey.
Hey.
Oh, I just remembered. Okay. Did you watch the Garbage Warrior DVD?
Yes.
Oh, isn't that awesome?
It's an amazing film.
I love it.
It ended, and I just sort of sat there staring at my blank computer screen.
It is great, and I've been like letting people around here, as many people I can, watch it. Oh, did you check out the Mercury and Fish Report thing I emailed you a week or so ago?
Yes, I did.
Okay, this is one of the things that I was wanting to call about. Okay, you know, you see the pan of the 400 coal-fired power plants that are on that list in 2004.
Right.
And all the readings of all the lakes, and all the fish they took with the mercury in them. What I want to know, you know, with the high fructose corn syrup being tested with the mercury,
mm-hmm.
What I want to know, everything else tested to see how much mercury it has in it. I'm wondering how much of the normal food we eat every day has mercury in it.
A lot.
No, apple. Come on, it's like they're just doing that one.
Look, well, you know what? When you see the aggregate results of all of this testing, what you find out is that in the course of a fairly short period of time, Ange, you know, just a couple of hundred years, we have managed to toxify an entire continent.
Yeah, I know.
And that's mind-boggling, because if you study the other civilizations that lived here. You know, it took the Anasazi culture in the Southwest a good long while before they did themselves out of somewhere to live. It took a good few hundred, maybe thousand years, before Mayan megaculture collapsed in Central America. We'll never know how long Mexica culture would have lived, Texcocan or Tezcatl or any of those cultures. We'll never know the Tarascan culture. We will never know how long those cultures would have survived had they been able to run to the full flower of their existence. Certainly, the first peoples who were almost immediately wiped out by disease the first instant that a white European got near them on the eastern seaboard of what is now the United States, they had a completely sustainable culture that was fairly civilized by even modern standards. Now, granted, they didn't have Fox News, but I don't necessarily think that's a cultural step forward.
I don't either. It's a step back.
But in the short space of about 200 years, we have toxified this planet literally from sea to shining sea. There is no woman in this country who does not have, by virtue of hair sample testing, there's no woman of childbearing age in this country who does not have enough mercury in her system to account for a 10-point IQ deficit in any child she bears. Rocket fuel components.
Yeah.
Rocket fuel components are in breast milk. You can't eat the fish.
No. What can you eat? I mean, really, what can you eat? I mean, if all these scientists actually started studying everything else, what would we find? I was watching TV the other day, and this commercial came on, and it was for this, big towering thing that you put in your house or place you live that detoxifies the air or whatever in your apartment. And I'm thinking, they need to build something to detoxify this whole world. Because if they don't, it's...
And look, you know, I know it drives right-wingers absolutely around the bend when we talk about these things, Ange. But so-called Western culture are the ones that have done this. All right? White European cultures spread across the planet are the ones who have toxified the planet. The Japanese culture nearly deforested all of the Japanese home islands at one point in time, but then they had enough enlightenment to back off and not let it happen. Various cultures have risen and fallen all over the planet, either naturally or unnaturally, because they've reached points of unsustainability. But when it comes to outright toxins, things that are overtly poisonous to the continued human existence, you know, brown people didn't do that. Light tan people didn't do that.
They did.
White people did that.
A couple of weeks ago, or I don't know when it was one of your shows a couple of weeks ago or so, you were talking about someone was talking about when the Europeans came here to America and killed all the Indians. The Indians had their thing just fine. And they helped.
Oh, there's a great T-shirt out there that shows
everybody knows that here. You know, but it's like, and then, well, because my great-grandmother was one of my parents' side was full-blooded Cherokee Indian. And my dad's side was very, very poor. He didn't even have electricity. He grew up in the middle of Arkansas, and they were very poor. And that's just like you're saying, you know, they took these people and they made them slaves, and they actually took away the rich life that they had, you know, and made them these pitiful people that forgot who they even were because of the society that was forced upon them, that they, you know, didn't want or didn't need. And it is. I mean, it's like history. People need to learn about history or they'll just die. And we're lied to constantly. You know, like in the 80s, we were lied to with, you know, Reagan and the Guatemalan thing, you know. And thank God for the internet because, you know, Heather, if you went to back in the 80s and the 70s, you didn't get this information like you do now. The young people are so fortunate now to have all this information. You know, and I know some of it is bad, you know, like the Glenn Beck, Hannity's and all those crazy people, but I think the younger generation is given the opportunity is a lot smarter than that. You know, like Cassie, for instance. She's awesome.
Yes, she is. Know? And she's gonna kick butt in that upcoming speech competition. I feel so bad for her, though. She was in the chat room a night or so ago, and apparently, and this isn't as gossipy as it sounds, but she was talking about the fact that in school she has been forced to read Ayn Rand. And that's just abusive as far as I'm concerned, that horrible, horrible woman. And she's going to have to write a paper on it, and I think you ought to be able to conscientiously object to Ayn Rand.
Well,
but she'll get through it. And the thing is, you know, you're absolutely right, Ange. Them kids nowadays, see, I'm using my geezer voice. Them kids nowadays, they have much more information at their fingertips. And if you choose to take advantage of it, it's pretty daggum amazing.
It is. It is very amazing. Because when I was a kid, you know, I had to pretty much fend for myself, use the encyclopedias that, you know, were from the 70s. And
books. And, oh, I remember being turned on to the...
You know, that stuff in the library.
Yeah, what was it? The Digest of Periodical Literature? Learning to negotiate that thing was like learning linear A.
And my parents, you know, love them. They're smart in the ways that they're smart. But I never had any help, you know, with if I ask them, you know, something, it's like, I don't know. Look it up yourself. I didn't have a parent that I could ask them something like you, for instance. Your kids are very lucky because you know a lot about history and you're very smart. You know, they can ask you and you will tell them. You know, I didn't have parents like that.
Yeah, but they got to ask. And they're adolescents now, Ange, and they're not as prone as they used to be to ask because they are adolescents now, and I have entered into that period in their lives where I'm a total moron. And I'll be a moron for the next 6 to 7 years. And I'm just okay with it, and
yeah,
I'm just learning to deal with it.
My parents, they're wonderful people, and, you know, they're brilliant in their own, you know, ways that they are. Just for the fact the way, you know, they raised me, I feel very proud, you know, to have parents that made me the, you know, loving human being I am today. So... But, you know, sometimes there's book smarts and sometimes there's common sense smart. And sometimes the common sense smart is a lot better, you know. Because if you try to force too much down your kid's throat, just like you said, they'll rebel, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kids' job. I don't care what generation is. The kids have the job of rebellion.
Thanks.
Well, Ange, I wish you a wonderful weekend, and we will talk soon, I hope, and keep the emails flowing.
All right, I will.
Okay, take care. Bye now. Calling from Arkansas, home, in Arkansas, that little enclave of the university there, the Hogs. That's Ange. And let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
Happy Easter.
Indeed to you as well. However you might celebrate it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's just something as simple as Happy Easter. There's even Christian-on-Christian bigotry in that because it's not Easter for a whole bunch of the Christian world. The Eastern Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, Armenian Orthodox, Syrian Orthodox, Serbian Orthodox, it ain't their Easter. That was one of the things they had a big tiff about 1,000 years ago and haven't been able to work out yet. Nobody's got a calendar they can agree on.
Right, right. And then it's Passover for others and it's, pagan stuff, spring, was it the equinox or something?
Well, no, Beltane passed a little while back, but,
okay.
Yeah, but it is. I guess last night was the big dinner of Passover, but it goes on for several days. So.
Okay.
But more than anything else, it's spring, I hope.
Yes, it is.
Of course, where you are, that just means it snows for another month and a half.
Well, we've had some nice rains, actually. Haven't had much snow this year, but there's been a lot in the mountains. And it's been nice. We've gotten some good clouds. We don't get a lot of clouds here, and sometimes I miss the clouds. I'm from a more cloudy part of the country. I grew up in Philadelphia. And, you know, it's interesting. The weather people are always saying, well, here comes gloomy weather. Here comes bad weather. And that always kind of bugged me. It kind of almost built up a prejudice against clouds. I mean, I understand they bum some people out, but I love them myself.
Yeah, it's like up in the northern panhandle of West Virginia, the Wheeling area, and I guess extending over toward Pittsburgh, they've got cloud cover something on the order of 65-70% of the year.
Okay.
But when the sun breaks through, those places are just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. Really quickly, regarding, I heard you mention you might switch to Skype phone service.
Well, no, I'm not switching. I'm just going to set up a, I'm trying to set up a Skype account so that folks who use Skype can dial in alternatively from the regular phone system, especially our international callers, and save them substantial scratch in reaching the program.
I see. Well, interesting. Yeah, I guess a lot of military personnel have been utilizing it during their, you know, assignments. And
well, early on, Skype was kind of interesting because they were, back when they were owned offshore by, what was it, a Norwegian outfit or some such, they refused to provide the National Security Administration, if I recall correctly, a back door by which they could hack in and listen. So naturally, Skype was rather quickly bought by an American corporation who, I understand, install the back door.
Oh, okay. I see. Wow. Yeah. Well, that would be great if you were able to get more international callers, too. NPR, they have their Talk of the Nation, and once a month they do a Talk of the World, and they encourage their callers in Europe, the Middle East, wherever, to call in. Sadly, they had Douglas Fife was one of the, you know, he was sitting in the studio and, you know, fielding some of these international calls. You know, he, Douglas Fife, or what's his, is that right?
Yeah, Fife, F-E-I-T-H, Fife.
Yeah, one of the people who signed that neocon.
Yeah, well, one of the war criminals.
Yeah, yeah. So he's there, and I don't know, not our best foot forward when it comes to dialoguing with the rest of the world. But, you know, I guess they got to spread it around, you know, let these ideologues in there. But I'm with Bob sometimes. God, it's like enough, you know. You know, who's going to say stop to them? Maybe we need to do that more. And stand. I loved how Bob put that. You know, stand up. REM actually has a song with that title, Stand. Stand in the place where you live. Think about direction. Wonder why you haven't. And stuff like that.
Yeah, I was thinking of that very same song when Bob was saying that.
I think also there's another verse, something like, stand in the place where you work, think about direction, wonder why you haven't before.
REM went about the business of being quite, I'm sure the right wing would say, seditious, while being, you know, eminently poppy.
Yep. They mixed it up in incredible ways. And I actually read an interview with Michael Stipe in Sojourners magazine, that kind of progressive Christian magazine. And that was really interesting. I think during that interview he said something about how he ghost wrote a review for their CD, Life's Rich Pageant, which a lot of people were, they were sometimes missing, you know, he doesn't like to say this song is about this, that, or the other thing, but every now and again there were certain points he was hoping to get across. And he talked about how that CD was connected in some ways to U.S. foreign policy in Latin America, including Guatemala. And so, interesting band for sure. Lately I've discovered a at all?
No.
It's basically one guy named Sam Beam from South Carolina. And a lot of love songs, for sure. A lot of love and loss and faith. And he, too, every once in a while, he'll say something kind of politically charged. And he has one song about entitled Radio Wars. And there's a verse, something like, the beast never seen licks its red talons clean. And lines about gold being buried in the ground and stuff like that. And guns growing out of our bones. And then he flips it around and reveals the beautiful things of life and about our nature and stuff like that. And wonderful stuff if you get a chance.
Iron and Wine.
Yeah. He has a few songs up on his, I think it's his MySpace site. One of them's been viewed like over 5 million times. So if nothing else, you check him out as a cultural phenomenon.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's so much good work going on in the arts. You know, sometimes people get kind of sentimental for, you know, the 60s musical movements of, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Joan Baez and Dylan. And we do owe them a lot, and they are really gifts to our culture. But I'm perfectly happy where we're at as a society regarding the arts, the music that's being created. It's inspired me time and time again.
I'd like to see us a little bit more nurturing of it.
Sure, that's true. That's true. We've got this band here called the Flowbots, which does kind of a hip hop rock, very politically conscious music. And Amy Goodman, the people at Democracy Now, helped them out by using a couple of their songs as bumper music during Democracy Now's program. And, you know, publicity like that goes a long way. And, you know, they come back from the break and she'll say, that was the Flowbots with Rise, you know. And I think a lot of people check that stuff out on her recommendation. So they're doing well. There are moments where we do support the arts like that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
But,
and I love hearing new stuff. I'm geezered. Something happened to me. I don't know if it was when I stopped taking Rolling Stone or just got busy being husband and dad or something, the time that I used to spend taking in keeping up with musical trends, sadly and shamefully for me, sort of fell by the wayside. And yeah. I used to look at my dad and I said, you know, Dad, come on. You haven't heard of anything since the Platters.
Right, right.
And he said, well, that's all right. I loved them. And I thought, you know, yeah. What a dinosaur you are. I mean, how hard is it? Just listen to the... And, you know, then I look up one day and went, oh, damn, I'm my dad.
I'm doing the same thing. A lot of my musical library hasn't grown since, you know, I mean...
But I'm fortunate because I do have people who... Turn me on to awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Make sure that I at least hear things. And, there are people all over the network who do that. And most particularly, David in Tennessee serves as my musical guru. And I hear amazing things thanks to him.
Great.
And hear about amazing things, you know. I'm still bummed out that the magazine No Depression doesn't do a print version anymore. But they've got what appears to be a very vibrant online presence, and it's something I need to go by more often.
Mm. Yeah, I remember when the print version folded. We've lost a lot of good magazines actually,
and we're losing them the same way kind of that we're losing newspapers, Preston, because nobody quite knows how to deal with the perceived and certain, sometimes in many cases, the real shift in where the marketing dollars are going.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but I'm not one prone to click pop-up ads. Now I'm a little different in that if I see a clean coal pop-up ad, I will click that little son of a gun. because I want those clean coal punks to pay as much as I can possibly make them pay. I had to, you know, because we all know something like clean coal is a dirty lie. It's okay. Click their ad so that they'll have to pay another nickel to Google, who at least has a, for instance, Google, who has an environmentally renewable, renewably responsible energy portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little bit of low rent subversion, but you know,
Definitely. I used to send back those postage paid, you know, solicitations from groups that I didn't like every once in a while, and write a note of dissent on them, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've done that too. That's eminently satisfying, isn't it? it's a little juvenile, but it sure feels good.
And I figure, you know, the person on the other end, you know, who's just kind of a bureaucrat, you know, in the system, but you let that person know, person to person, that there is dissent out there. It might lift their day, you know. They're probably...
Well, you know, and what I would do is I would tape a few pennies to a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Just to add a little bit more make weight so that the postage going back would be even more. So that I could make sure that however much it cost them to send it to me, I could cost them twice as much sending it back.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of marketing dollars, I've actually received some advertisements that I liked on my Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course I agree with a lot of the criticisms of marketing and advertising and all that stuff, but it does seem like they profiled me to some extent and are like, okay.
Oh, they absolutely do. I use a Gmail account, and let's see, let me just pick one randomly. Here's a notification that someone is following me on Twitter now. What have I got? The algorithms at Google think I might be interested in CEOs can still fly. Forget the big jet, take a King Air 200. Let's see, Realm Bendix King sales, service, and accessories. King size mattress, oversized down comforters, and king bedspreads cheap. I think they've still got some work to do on their algorithm because I can't afford any of those.
Okay. Well, I certainly got plenty of stuff I wasn't interested in, and I still do, but recently I had this like advertisement for this lady coming to sing at the University of Colorado, and that university has a lot of interesting speakers and musicians come through, and this particular ad was for, I think her name's like Marisa, she's Portuguese, it's called Fado singing, which is kind of a blues, kind of a lament, very moving stuff. And then they had an advertisement for a lecture and things of that nature, which, you know, as far as advertising goes, I didn't mind it so much. So there are some useful corporations and useful money-making adventures out there for sure. You know, I wanted to say something also about this Somali pirate narrative that's being foisted into the public mind these days. Yeah, I think it's disturbing on a lot of levels. And typically one of them is the lack of context. I found an article by Jeremy Scahill on Common Dreams, and they talked about how this piracy started up about a decade ago. In the past decade, because about 10 years ago, European fishing trawlers started to come off the coast of Somalia and scooped all the life out of the seas, mm-hmm. and destroyed their livelihoods. That's when these desperate people then started to turn to, you know, seeing these boats pass by and trying to make money through, you know, detaining them. And one of these pirates was interviewed by the New York Times, and he even said, you know, we don't see ourselves as pirates. We see those who have been taking $300 million worth of tuna and lobster out of our coastal waters as the pirates. We are just looking for some payment. On top of that, this Jeremy Scahill article also went into how after the... You know, people started getting these odd rashes and
vomiting a lot and losing their hair. Well, after the tsunami, a bunch of barrels washed up on their shore, and it turned out to be radioactive waste.
Ginned up from the ocean bottom or something?
Yep. Apparently, they've been dumping this stuff off the coast, taking advantage of, you know, Somalia's kind of, you know, lack of defense, basically, and government chaos going on. But we should remember Lawrence Summers, who's, you know, one of the bigwigs.
Yeah, one of the money players.
Yeah, a transpartisan guy. He's there on, you know, both wings of the establishment. And I think he was at Harvard, president of Harvard at the time, when there was this memo he sent out that was leaked about how the civilized world, the developed countries, should export their waste to the developing world, because he had a couple rationales. One was, yeah, they might develop cancer. It might increase the risks of cancer, but for things like prostate cancer, they usually don't live long enough to develop that anyway.
Wow, that sounds like that Bush administration head of the civil rights voting section of the election commission or the DOJ when he said, well, you know, we can't really be accused of disenfranchising elderly black voters because most black folk don't live to be elderly anyway.
There you go. That's right.
And I start babbling noises that don't turn into words when I read stuff like that, because what's got to be wrong with your mind to make you think that way?
Yeah, and you know, they don't. Well, first it belies, and
I mean that's the forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown approach to world politics, and it's wholly unacceptable.
Right, right. But yeah, they see some populations as kind of expendable, and you know, they got to build up these rationalizations. And but people are dying right now, though. Someone should send Lawrence Summers a memo back. You know, apparently at least 300 people have died in Somalia of radiation sickness.
Good God. Well, you know, I love the synergy of our conversations, because another one of those people, Preston, who keep me up with musical trends and so forth, is another David in South Carolina. And he sent me an article earlier today from the BBC World Service by Nikki Jex, headline, Somali-born rapper returns to his roots. And it has to do with a hip-hop artist who lives in Canada now named Kanan. At 11, he found a hand grenade, detonated it by mistake, and blew up half his school. Later, he saw three of his closest friends shot dead. He and his mother fled Mogadishu in 1991, managed to get to Canada. And he has since channeled his life experience into his music. And he says, among other things, I don't think you can ever really escape Somalia once you've had that experience and lived in it. And he said that I really wanted to touch on, talking about his new album, I really wanted to touch on piracy, not from the way the media has been covering it, but from the way a Somali would talk about it. And he says, I think it's still undiscussed in the true sense of what is going on with it. It's conveniently discussed, not in a way that is well-rounded at all. A lot of the issues we talk about in Western media when we're concerned with Somalia are very much sensationalized. He says, we have family members whose homes were hit by rocket-propelled grenades, and we have to be responsible for trying to get them into proper hospitals if there's such a thing in Somalia. These things are daily issues, and everybody's just kind of trying to survive over there. And, of course, I always think back to Ben Birch's very prescient statement that if you want to see, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, if you want what Ben put forward, if you want to see the natural natural extension of complete laissez-faire free market capitalism, all you need to do is look at Somalia.
Anarcho-Randian capitalism, Friedman madness run afoot, run amok, big time. You know, Friedman, Milton Friedman, you know, he's one of the great rationalizers of this psychotic behavior. He's like, well, you know, corporations, they don't have morals. So there you go. And and it's just let it go, give it a free hand. So it's amoral, whatever. We're making money. Clear the way. And we'll send in the military. It's like Thomas Friedman. He was honest enough about it. I don't like his earlier work. The world is flat and is flawed in a lot of ways, and his Middle East work is pretty shameful. But he did have a comment. I think it was in the Lexus and the Olive Tree. Something about how, the free market won't work without a visible fist, you know, and that fist is McDonnell Douglas, which makes things possible for McDonald's and stuff like that. So, yeah, there's a fist there regarding the, you know, helping the invisible hand of the market along.
You mentioned that invisible hand of the market, and you touch on something that I wanted to make sure that I got to this evening, Preston. The chickens are coming home to roost here in Appalachia just today. And you know, in West Virginia, losing any jobs is pretty devastating. As of today, Massey Energy has idled 600 mountain removers. Most of them are mountain removers. And that unseen hand of the market, they seem to be okay with. You know, these people, these are people who have depended for years upon being able to continue destroying West Virginia in order to get a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And with that paycheck, they've done what the average American does. They bought a bunch of Chinese crap. They've bought stuff they can't afford on credit cards they don't need. And they bought a big shiny new pickup truck or a nice new SUV or some such, or put in the double wide, you know, what have you.
Yeah.
But now that's all over. See, it's April the 10th, 2009, Preston, and Massey Energy has already announced that they have already mined or dug up or blown up or blasted, extracted, acquired 95% of the coal that they had planned to acquire this year.
Hmm.
So, you know, that means 12 minus 4, yeah, that's 8 months. Yeah, unemployment's probably might very well run out before then, barring, you know, federal intervention.
Mm-hmm.
But our buddy Reverbo lived out your way at one point, and he was talking about, you know, how Colorado went through the boom and bust cycles with the hard rock mining industry, you know, silver, gold, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And any area that has mining in it is treated as a third world country because all the value is taken out and none of the value is put back.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of the people who are working for the people who are taking the value out.
Yep.
And at some point in time, and it's so sad because it's difficult to get this dialogue started. Because when you've just lost your job, you're looking around and you're going, you know, dear God, what happens next?
Right. Right.
And this is the time when you ask the question, are you still okay with the unseen hand of the market? Is it all right with you that you have been used and abused by your employer, and now your employer is trying to save its hide by dumping your ass?
Yeah.
You know, they're not laying off executives, they're laying off workers.
Yep.
And that's the part of the process where I know these people do such horrible, horrible things to the places where we live and to the future of my children and other children and grandchildren and generations unborn and undreamt of. They do such horrible things to their future. But I can't step back far enough, Preston, that I absolutely don't give a damn about them. because, you know, you got a lot of people who never got out of high school or maybe got a high school diploma who counted on the notion that by virtue of learning how to run a D9 Caterpillar or operate a drag line or some level of or set demolition charges, that would be enough to account for a $50,000 to $60,000 a year paycheck for them in perpetuity. But it's the coal industry, for the love of Christ, it's the coal industry. And if West Virginia has learned anything, it is that for every boom in the coal industry, there is a quick following bust. Because the only thing coal knows how to do is flood the market and then turn around and abuse the people that they use to extract the coal by watching them starve into desperation, and then they'll come back and say, well, you know, it's because we were paying you too much. We need to pay you less now.
Yep.
I mean, Massey has modified its benefit plans. It's modified its future. It's pulling equipment out and from an opposition to mountaintop removal standpoint, this is all good news. But
There will be a financial dislocation and all this stress.
Yeah, and you know what? Massey Energy is not going to be there to teach these mountain removers who are never going to have a job in that industry again.
Mm-hmm.
Massey Energy is not going to be there to teach them how to do something worthwhile.
And there aren't big subsidies for these other sorts of, you know, businesses and entrepreneurial projects and nonprofit stuff that could be going on. You know, this deceit of the free market, you know, they've gotten all kinds of subsidies and, Burlington Northern got some free land, these giant land grants from the U.S. government to develop the trains and, you know, a whole bunch of this land it turned out they didn't need for their trains. So they had giant forests on this land and started chopping down the trees and selling them and then turning around refusing to even want to pay any taxes on this giveaway, this giant subsidy from the public. That's the free market. You know, it's giant, massive public subsidies all over the place. You know, the cell phone companies, they wouldn't exist. It's not for public investment in the satellites that, you know, NASA created and that NASA puts into the sky and just on and on. The whole internet, the computer industry, that came out of public investment, public research. Free market, though. But they want to make that argument so that they can concentrate wealth. You know, Ayn Rand, it's the lone mega entrepreneur who did it all, the genius. You know, it
right.
Just had to push the dumb masses out of the way to do his brilliant thing, right? Right. But, the Thomas Friedman quote, to be more precise, is the hidden hand of the market will never work without a hidden fist. McDonald's cannot flourish without McDonnell Douglas. And the hidden fist that keeps the world safe for Silicon Valley's technologies to flourish is called the U.S. Army, Air Force, Navy, and Marine Corps. And back to that fist, a real concrete example right now. John Bolton, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, real hawk, super hawk, was on the Sean Hannity show yesterday. And I heard him say that, regarding the pirates and their terrorists, you know, the dehumanization was completely in everything he was saying. Then he says, we have to destroy their ships and we have to destroy their villages, make them feel real pain. Bolton is like a figure. He's like King Herod, you know, like massacre of the innocents.
Yeah.
If anyone rebels against the empire, you smash them and you smash everyone around.
Make them bleed a little bit. Make them bleed a lot.
And Hannity just applauded it and, you know, let everyone know, though, he wasn't going to be in today. Oh, he had to be off for Good Friday, being the great Christian American that he is.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And, you know, right now I'm reviewing Ward Churchill's book, A Little Matter of Genocide. There's some similarities, you know, all this stuff. It's not in the past. It's very much present. And, I think people like John Bolton, again, back to what Bob in North Dakota was saying, you know, let's try to keep trying to find ways to say stop. And, they're planning some major aggression on the Horn of Africa for sure. So, you know, exposing the oversimplifications and stuff, I think, can be helpful and
No, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I wanted to bring something up to you. News Ninja Gene sent a link along to me, and granted, I am always skeptical of anything that comes from Rents.com.
Okay.
But this is an editorial cartoon. And I took a magnifying glass down, and unless this is a very, very elaborate fraud, and I don't think it is because there's other stuff that from other sources that back it up, this is an editorial cartoon from the Chicago Tribune, which was a rabidly right-wing rag during the Depression. It appears to be from April the 21st, 1934. And it is a horse-drawn cart running amok, and there's bags of money being shoveled out of it by people labeled Wallace and Ickes, and the wagon says depleting the resources of the soundest government in the world, and another sign on the wagon says young Pinkies from Columbia and Harvard, and in the distance a figure with a pointed hat and a star on it labeled Stalin is saying how red the sunrise is getting. And meanwhile, in the foreground, in the left corner foreground, sits what is apparently Karl Marx with a big poster that says Plan of Action for U.S. Spend, spend, spend. Under the guise of recovery, bust the government, blame the capitalists for the failure, junk the Constitution, and declare a dictatorship. How much difference is there between that and the Tea Parties? And this phony outrage that's being ginned up about a spending plan that was inaugurated under the Bush administration?
Mm-hmm. I actually got a phone call, you know, one of those robocalls regarding joining one of these Tea Parties. So, yeah, this is a huge campaign of theirs. Glenn Beck's been pushing some website, I forget what it's called, but yeah, the Tea Party. I like how Tom Hartman has retrieved that history of what the Boston Tea Party, you know, was very much about. Apparently the Dutch East India Tea Company was trying to, you know, doing their own version of some imposing a free market regarding tea, and, you know, had more to do with corporate power than, you know, taxation without representation.
Oh, absolutely. The things are never quite what they seem. And somebody else that's been doing some great work, I mentioned other sources, Preston, over at The Progressive. They have what has thus far been a five-part series because, you know, The Progressive's been around. They've seen a few things, and they got some archives. Mm-hmm. They've been around since 1909. I'd love to go to their centennial anniversary conference in Madison in May, but that ain't going to happen. A column from February 3rd, 1934, Businessmen Then and Now. They strutted up and down the avenue in those bygone days, throwing out their chests and bidding the world stand to one side. They were freeborn, 100% American big businessmen who took back talk from nobody. Now they take a handout wherever they can get it. The Reconstruction Finance Corp. has just issued its 1932-1933 diet schedule for anemic U.S. industries. The banks were the sickest, so they got the most, $2.1 billion out of a total of $4.1 billion listed as authorized and outstanding commitments. Other credit loan organizations got $670 million. The insurance companies got only $115 million. The railroads, $412 million. That makes $3.3 billion, or over 80% of the total that went directly to big business from the federal treasury. That was just the beginning. Under the other aids to recovery, other billions will be ladled into the mouths of these very individualistic big businessmen who 5 years ago were yelling their heads off about no government interference with business. 1934, February 3rd.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is.
And you've got the same crowd opposing it. It's absolutely fascinating.
It was interesting to see that poll that came out recently regarding capitalism and whether people favor it, you know, although it's not really a capitalist system, but still just a growing skepticism of, you know, the way this has been structured. And Actually, Democracy Now! Had a guy on from North Carolina, and I think he's in Asheville. No, actually, he's in, like, Carrboro. And you know, there are these little towns throughout the country where people are creating these kind of alternative, more autonomous, locally-based economies. And this particular guy, he was involved with a sustainable agriculture and biofuels and sensible biofuels. And, a community currency. They actually had their own, made up their own currency, and people can barter with it in different ways. And interesting stuff like that going on. And let's see. Oh, and then we've got the Green Festival coming here to Denver. In a couple of weeks, I'm hoping these gatherings become like sports gatherings are now, you know, becoming a regular opportunity for people to come together as a community and, you know, adopt a narrative, kind of a, you know, a social gathering sort of thing, but, you know, have it be about something other than, you know, this Jay Cutler thing has been dominating, you know, these stories that they've, again, that they voiced in the to the public consciousness. It's a kind of a, it's a diversion, deflection.
Well, you know, the thing I loved best out of this particular article I was just sharing a moment ago, I love being prescient. I mean, I do take pride in my work. And a couple of days ago, I was arguing that Wall Street, the Wall Streeters aren't geniuses, they're babies, and that we need to regulate them the way that we baby proof a house, because they've proven themselves unable to not do self-damaging conduct.
Right.
You know, credit default swaps being a classic case in point. Well, on February the 3rd, 1934, Scott Nearing wrote, oh, somebody get me my tattered robe with the moon and stars on it and my worn out eight ball. February 3rd, 1934, Scott Nearing wrote, "These bank presidents and railroad magnates are as ignorant as newborns and as self-opinionated as morons. Instead of subsidies, they need a nurse."
Yeah.
Am I good or what? I mean, no offense, but I mean, really. 2 days ago, 2 days ago in 2009, I'm calling Wall Street a bunch of babies, and here on February the 10th, I find somebody making the same reference about the two generations previous, the same crowd in 1934.
Yeah.
It's either synchronicity or something.
I know. Speaking of banks, I noticed right now the way the story is told. Wells Fargo, you know, we're all supposed to be happy because Wells Fargo has a record profit this quarter. And, you know, yes, it's great that our, you know, people invested in 401ks, you know, it's not just going down. But, you know, again, manipulative oversimplifications. And I actually saw a documentary on Link TV about Obama. And when he went to Africa, it was like Senator Obama goes to Africa. And in that movie, he's meeting with some people in Kenya, and they're talking about microcredit, and he mentions Shore Bank in Chicago, which is this community-oriented bank that emphasizes, you know, helping working-class people and helping businesses that are investing in conservation, efficiency, solar panels, stuff like that. Doing a kind of sedition from the Wells Fargo model, I think, in some ways, and it'd be good to hear about their profits going up, you know, and I think they are. They seem to be expanding, and so anyway, just a different banking story, different sort of banking. Sharia banking actually is another kind of radical thing coming up. They've turned Sharia into a dirty word, but I think. There's a segment of it that the banking community doesn't like, and Sharia is all about low-interest loans.
Right. Loans. You know, and we forget all too easily, even at this so-called Holy Week, that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Nazarene day laborer,
didn't much care for what he called usury and we call interest-bearing lending.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bob, you mentioned that Somalian rapper.
Yeah.
It's Kenan? Or...
Yeah.
Do you know the name of his most recent CD by chance?
It was listed on the story. Let me get it back up here. I've got it right here. Sort of.
Because I do have his earlier one, which was called Dusty Footed Philosopher, and that was really good work.
Oh, that's neat. Just give me a second. See, I'm on the spot now, and I got to find it.
I could.
Well, where did it go? This is frustrating. I'm looking too hard and too quick.
I could Google it or something, his name.
Yeah, it's like K'N'A'N.
Okay. I'll do that.
That's how he spells it now.
And I also want to mention the Sierra Leone All-Stars, who were also, refugees in Africa. And again, this is very much, it's not over there. This is very much connected to us in so many ways. Our cell phones, everyone who has a cell phone is connected to Africa because one of the elements of cell phones is called coltan or coltane. And that comes from the Congo. It's one of the richest deposits of it.
And that goes back to something that has really, really resonated with me, and that is a statement by Van Jones that he made the couple of times that I have seen him speak. And he said, as we consider a green economy, and as we consider what green jobs mean, and as we consider what sustainable energy means, we have got to couple all of those things with social justice and environmental justice, or else the next wars we fight will not be for oil, but for lithium to power our battery-powered tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an irrefutable line of reasoning. Because, while we like to keep the cars going and everything, what we really are concerned about, witness the fact that the Air Force keeps talking about running its fleet of aircraft on liquid coal fuel. What we really care about is keeping our engines of destruction going.
Yep.
Peace is hard work, and you have to look for it to find it.
I had a kind of an ideological... a guy I disagree with a lot at work, but he's a smart guy and well-spoken, and I hear him out. And sometimes I have to kind of refine my own arguments to, respond. And something he said to me recently regarding hybrid cars, something he said, he suggested that over the course of its lifetime, they're actually more problematic because of the battery and stuff. What to do with the batteries and stuff like that. I don't know if that's exactly accurate. I think there's some truth, though, to that comment. I mean, there are these issues with the batteries of these things. So they're not, green cars, a little hyperbolic.
Well, there are legitimate issues around electric cars related to simply where the electricity comes from. If you take all the cars that are running on hydrocarbon fuels, gasoline or whatever, today, and convert them over to electricity tomorrow, American electricity generation and American electricity use is going to soar through the roof, which means more coal gets burned.
Yep. Yeah, and there's the other traditional issues of cars. Where does the rubber come from for the tires? And, what are some of the constituents in that stuff? And, a lot of things, but still, it's.
I don't know. Does an electric car need a radiator? Think about just how toxic typical usual antifreeze is.
Mm-hmm. The response, though, is I accept those criticisms, but still.
still, again, the vision, the progressive vision is, you know, it's multifold. It includes concepts like green design. The author of the book Cradle to Cradle, you know, talking about creating things that can be just in this cycle. And what was waste before kind of becomes food for the, you know, in nature, it becomes food for other organisms, and we can create goods that aren't don't toxify the world, and can be kind of regenerated, retweaked, and much longer lasting. You know, give us a period of being in the world, like the Hopi and the Maya and the what was it in Africa, the Maasai.
Yes.
How long? And tragically, just recently, I mean, you know, some cultures are being kind of declared extinct, more or less. I don't know if it was the Maasai, but there was one in Africa recently. There's a magazine called Cultural Survival that does really interesting work on this stuff, you know, about the languages being lost, too. It's sad, but again, there's a resistance, and you know, a lot of interesting organizing going on. You know, but in addition to kind of redesigning cars and doing other things, redesigning our communities. And so we don't need a car to get around, you know, where we can walk again, where we can utilize that noble invention, the bicycle. We could look at what our ancestors did. And some
or our two noble legs.
Yeah, you bet. You bet.
See, one of the things, and this is totally a tangent, but you and I are good at that, Preston. You know how firmly I believe in universal health care.
Yeah.
We now have the expanded S-chip that is providing health care for many more American children than the other old chip program did. And it's being financed by a tax on cigarettes. And if nobody else on the planet understands, I understand how deleterious the damn things are. But it seems sort of, it seems like something out of Jonathan Swift to try to raise money for children's health care on the back of something that you're hoping people will quit using.
Yeah,
and by extension, though, you know, I talked about using our two noble legs. The younger generation, the children, you know, the massive rampant obesity problem that this country has, ain't caused by tobacco. Okay, the spread of diabetes among children in this country ain't caused by tobacco. It is caused in large part by good old fashioned, well, not really, good old high tech, high fructose corn sweetener.
Yep. There's now, a tax on that stuff.
Well, indeed. Why not, instead of a nationwide tax on a pack of cigarettes, which, you know, okay, do that. Try to get people to quit that way. Good luck. Because, you know, an addict will deny himself other things in order to have his addictive substance. But anyway, well, what in the hell would be wrong with a penny on a bottle of pop that is almost exclusively high fructose corn sweetener now and is lighting up the pancreases and aisles of Langerhans and whatnot of children across this country and around this globe? Why not do that? You know, and it's a good old fashioned regressive tax. It's a tax on the people who use it, and it by definition, poor people use it more. Poor people pay a higher percentage of gross personal income than wealthy people do in paying those regressive taxes. But if you're going to have a regressive tax, why not have it be a regressive tax that is spread across the board and is actually aimed at something that is doing profound damage to children's health?
Yep. How we could fund so many things, you know, by a combination of sensible taxes, not taxes that will really harm people, but maybe get them thinking about some of these purchases and encourage different kinds of purchases, like drop taxes entirely on fruits and vegetables and
you know, with, you know, healthy, nutritious things.
Oh, by the way, you said one of the magic words. If I had the ability on radio to drop a duck, I would. The business of Michelle Obama's garden.
Yep.
Guess who's angry?
Cargill.
The Mid-America Crop Life Association.
Okay.
They represent Monsanto, Dow, AgroSciences, DuPont Crop Protection, that gang.
Okay.
And they're really upset with Michelle Obama's garden because she's not putting any poison on it.
Okay.
They issued a statement. Fresh foods grown conventionally are wholesome and flavorful, yet more economical. As you go about planning and planting the White House garden, we respectfully encourage you to recognize the role conventional agriculture plays in the U.S. in feeding the ever-increasing population, contributing to the U.S. economy, and providing a safe and economical food supply. How dare they call genetically modified crops raised with the assistance of poisons made from hydrocarbon fuels? How dare they call that conventional, Preston? Sorry, not yelling at you.
Right.
But I saw this earlier today in a kicked furniture.
Where did you find that?
Good old Amanda Turkle over at Think Progress posted that at 10:34 this morning, and I read it probably at about 10:35 and went, can't they leave the damn garden alone?
Right.
You know, God forbid, I mean, it's just a simple little garden, Preston, but God forbid she had said that she was going to do permaculture. God forbid that she was going to do something, you know, that didn't have 3-foot rows between it for a gas-powered two-cycle engine rototiller to go through, or four-cycle, whatever. God forbid she'd done something that actually used composting and sustainable practices and, you know, the raised bed gardening or anything like that that just, you know, makes plants go crazy. You know, I mean, she just put in a plain little old garden, and even now the poisoners are pissed.
It's sedition to the agribusiness matrix, and God bless her for it. It's great. And
you know, she loves her daughters. I wouldn't want to give them a tomato that had been. Well, I'm hoping the plants are from heirloom seeds myself. I get finicky about even that because I don't want to raise none of those tomatoes that like what they raise, you know, down on the farms in South God knows where, and ship up here greener than little green apples to so-called ripen on the way, and you slice into them, and it's like slicing into a styrofoam cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I live for late July, early August when the tomatoes start coming in, and you can just, you know what, you can pour a little handful of kosher salt. I know kosher salt pisses off the fundamentalists, but I like kosher salt. You can pour a little handful of kosher salt in your hand, and if you haven't poisoned your tomato plants, you can go out to the garden, Preston, and you can get one of them big old multi-lobed heirloom funky-looking things like, say, a brandy wine, and you can just take that first you can just kind of polish it like you would an apple on your shirt, and you take the first bite out of it unsalted so you got some wet to stick the salt to, and then you just dip that one little bit right in that salt, and oh, my God, and you're standing there in the middle of the garden, and you feel like Adam.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. That's an appropriate feeling. Again, these
and for the subversives among us, there's also that little moment when you do that and you just want to stand there and raise your middle finger on one hand, the hand that ain't holding the tomato and the salt, just raise that middle finger up in the air and go, Dow, Monsanto, Cargill, Archer Daniels Midland.
Feeling like Adam. That's just a great way to put it, Bob. Oh, and I was looking at it came on Wikipedia. It's The Dusty Foot on the Road is his most recent
movie. Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
It's got one song on it called Somalia and another one called America.
Okay.
And I guess they're back to back or something.
Yeah, and this is more more of the reason why I don't feel like we're losing out music-wise. You know, not only do we have, you know, domestic, all sorts of brilliant stuff going on here in the U.S., but, you know, I think today we're more aware oftentimes of the international music going on and, you know, stuff like the, kind of the hybrids of art forms are rap mixing with traditional music of Africa. The rap, some of the hip hop I'm familiar with in Latin America is phenomenal. One guy in particular in Mexico City, they call him kind of the Tupac of Mexico. And he does things like fundraisers for women's groups and the Zapatistas, really puts it out there courageously. And this one CD he has, it's all in Spanish. And, you know, even if you don't know Spanish, you can kind of get a feel for the energy of it. And you can figure out a few words. He'll sing about campesinos and, you know, peasant farmers.
Mm-hmm.
In one song called Resist Day. You know, I mean, we can figure out what he's talking about, you know, resist on that song. But he opens it with a sample of a Howard Zinn speech. And Zinn says something like, I'm going to talk about many things tonight, but you basically should remember just two words. Governments lie. And then he busts into the song about resistance.
Oh, that's cool. That reminds me of... the homage that Radiohead did for Bill Hicks.
Oh, I missed that.
Well, Radiohead named one of their albums after one of Bill Hicks's lines, or yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I bet I can find that pretty quick. But I love it when media cross pollinates like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, here it we'll be there in a minute.
Yeah. And quickly on those taxes and whether where we can get money from to fund various projects, you know, bring the money back from those offshore bank accounts in the Bahamas and the Bermudas. And that's something Obama has spoken about that's been helpful. You know, certainly plenty of flaws in the way he has to, you know, concede things to the establishment, but still he brings up issues like you know, blocking. He actually introduced a bill regarding ending the tax loophole of offshore bank accounts.
Oh, and by the way, it's Tool. It's Tool
tip that
reference.
Tip.
Yeah, with Third Eye, and let's see, on Spa has a self-titled album, Spa, from 1997 that was dedicated to Hicks. And Radiohead's second album, The Bends, was dedicated to Bill Hicks.
Okay. Thing I didn't know that. See?
English, I'm reading, this is from Wikipedia. English breakbeat artist Adam Freeland sampled Revelations, Bill Hicks' Revelations, for his track We Want Your Soul. Another punk rock band from Wales called McCluskey. Reference to Hicks' routine in their song "To Hell with Good Intentions." Again, I love that stuff.
Yeah, me too.
And there are other examples of it that don't immediately come to mind, but being willing to play with that stuff within, you know, within the idea of a Creative Commons or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Makes art better. Well, Preston, I'm going to run along.
Okay,
it's about
great.
20 till, and I'm going to try to hit a couple more lines here. Sounds if they're good. Still there.
Well, great catching up with you.
Oh, good talking to you, and have a wonderful weekend. If you celebrate mm-hmm. Easter, I hope it's a very good one for you.
Likewise.
All right.
Take care.
Bye now. Preston calling from Denver. Yeah, I haven't decided whether we're going to have a run at the Lamb or not. Stuff's incredibly expensive. Who to thunk? Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Richard, Bob.
Oh, hey, Richard.
I have been, few items from old shows have been coming to my attention. I wanted to mention a couple.
Okay.
always like to hear where Preston is at, by the way. You know, you were talking about big cities. I can't remember who you were talking with last week. I think Kevin had just called. I grew up in New York.
Oh, that probably was a conversation with Kevin.
Yeah, and New York has changed drastically since I grew up there. And the key ingredient was rent control. And New York is mostly a city of renters.
Sure.
And, you know, if you want to have a healthy arts community in any place, cheap housing is an essential ingredient. And New York no longer has that. Making sense?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because the artists are usually scrounging. And if the cost of living is too high, the artists have to go somewhere else. They can't stay. And New York rent control has virtually evaporated due to political changes. And, you know, landlords typically, to a landlord, his property is his investment. And he wants to see return on that investment like any other investment. It's, you know, as simple as that, money in, money out. And so I think New York has suffered a lot because of this. And San Francisco has actually, you know, you mentioned San Francisco in the same league as New York, and I definitely disagree with that. I mean, I really view San Francisco as a city with tremendous problems, and it's not a good place for the arts, mainly because the cost of living is so high, and the money that goes into the arts is typically large-scale stuff. The city will support a very big museum. There's not that much in the way of support of artists themselves. And the same is true of music. I mean, San Francisco has a big opera company, and that takes a tremendous amount of money.
And I'm probably going to betray my cultural bias or my cultural ignorance when I say that when I think of all the arts that need supporting, opera comes in about 19th on the list.
Yeah, well, opera, you know, I'm a classical musician by training.
Right, now, I mean no offense by that. It just...
Yeah, well, in general, I have a lot against opera. Let me put it that way.
I mean, it's great for costumers, it's great for makeup artists, it's great for stagehands and technicians and all the people who are involved in making live theater happen, but as an art form, I'm sorry, it's just me. I'm sure there are people out there that get it, that could try very patiently to explain to me. I mean, sure, who doesn't bawl like a baby at Pagliacci?
Well, Pagliacci is a good piece of work, I think. You know, I, in general, do not like opera.
I got the wrong introduction to it, Richard.
Yeah.
Because as a high school senior, Bob's story time here, as a high school senior in Alabama, and relatively uncultured, it was the goal of my humanities teacher and my other arts teachers to expose us little Southern people to something approaching art. So toward the end of our senior year, we all got our good clothes together, and we took a bus to Memphis, Tennessee. I know. Defining art, exposing little Alabama rednecks to culture by going to Memphis is probably going to strike some people as slightly odd who are outside the South. But they had a really nice zoo, so we went to that. They had a nice museum, we went to that. And then we went to dinner at a very swank restaurant, where all of us little heathens proceeded to wet our fingers in the crystal stemware and make the crystal glasses sing, much to the horror and chagrin of our teachers, because the seniors from the year before had told us to do that, and we told the juniors rising to make sure they did. And as far as I know, it's continuing to this day. Ah, tradition. So there was a night, and then we went to the opera. And we saw an opera called Manon. Not Manon Lescaut. No, no. Well, now I can't remember. It was either Manon. Because there's a Manon and there's a Manon Lescaut. And maybe it was the latter. But anyway, whichever one it was, you know, we opened the program and, you know, you're sitting and, you know, we were up in the nosebleed section and everything. But you open the program and, you know, just like any play, it tells you what the setting, what the scene is of the play. And I remember opening that thing and seeing on a vast deserted plain outside New Orleans. And to a little southern kid who's got some, who's got a fairly good working concept of what New Orleans looks and looked like, on a vast deserted plain outside New Orleans, for the time and setting of the play, you know, you just knew that you were not fooling around with anything approaching reality.
That's true. That's the point I have to make, too, is that I dislike most opera because it's crappy theater.
Yes.
I want opera to be good theater.
It's really good singing. It's really good it's like a good singing burrito with a crappy tortilla wrapped around it. Of bad theater. Exactly, Richard.
Yeah, and so now there's two operas I just love, and one of them is Boris Godunov, and the other one is Vacek.
Now see, you've just run off miles ahead of me on a dead sprint because I'm lost now.
Well,
but you like it mainly for the music, right?
I like it for everything. It's good theater. It's crazy. I mean, the thing is, you don't go running out of the opera house whistling tunes after you've seen either of these.
I mean, I read this thing, and it happened in your town, okay? I mean, San Francisco being your town. I read this review. The David from Tennessee put me onto it, and I think we had an off-air conversation, just laughed ourselves stupid about it one evening. There may have been booze involved. I'm not sure. But anyway, San Francisco Opera premiered this new work about the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
A few years back, and I remember reading the reviews and just thinking, yeah, I could go see this thing 8 times and I would not get out of it what this review says is in it.
Well, it depends. The thing is, how would I put it? A lot of classical music, I mean, we could go on for hours about this, but a lot of classical music to me is badly presented, badly performed, and people can't relate to it because it's got no soul. You know, and
well, see, when I was studying theater back when I was a little bitty redneck, we read a book called The Empty Space, I think it was. And it had definitions, working definitions of different kinds of theater in it.
Yes.
And there was a chapter in it called Dead Theater, all about opera.
Huh. Interesting. So what do they say?
Oh, it's opera is dead theater. Opera is a non-living form. You know, and what they meant by, you know, you can take Euripides, you can take Aristophanes, and you can take Shakespeare, Molière, you can take Chekhov. Although I'm told in Russian Chekhov is actually funny. I have yet to see a funny English production of Chekhov. The Uncle Vanya or the Cherry Orchard or something. But anyway, you can take any one of those, Richard, and you can make it meaningful. But that by virtue of the nature of the rules of opera, it is so static and so staid that it's dead.
Well,
people get all worked up about changes to opera the way people get worked up about rule changes in golf.
Well, there's a whole shtick to it, you know. It's a social construct. I mean, opera is supposedly an art, you know, an entertainment medium for the wealthy. We got that whole thing. And it's a star system in the large cities that have opera companies. You know, L.A. has no opera company.
Why am I not surprised?
And if I were to do my whole, whatever career I've got again, I
probably would have been happiest being a studio musician in L.A., but I didn't know that at the time.
Well, see, that's like for me, if we go out on a Sunday afternoon or something, my radio is pretty much constantly tuned to NPR, and I go click. And I'll hear some guy whose testicles sound like they're trying to come out of his ears. You know, doing that.
Yeah.
And it's just click. I mean, the kids don't even have to say, come on, Dad, turn off the opera. I do it by myself.
Really, really. Well, my favorite operas, like I said, are Balzac's a modern opera. It's surrealistic. It's 12-tone. And it's so crazy and sordid that it's wonderful. You see, and Boris Godunov is similar. It's, first of all, it's Pushkin. So we're starting out with some good stuff.
And well, it's that, and again, Richard, it's also the ripoff factor. Now, I understand that 2 centuries ago, this was probably how things worked. But some guy who doesn't have enough gumption to come up with his own libretto just rips off Hamlet and writes music around it. I mean, the same thing happens today. You've got there's a brilliant piece of social commentary masquerading as fantasy, called Peter Godbold and I talked about it a year or more ago, called Wicked. All right.
Called what?
Wicked.
Wicked.
Wicked. It is the story of the Wicked Witch of the West, told from the point of view of the Wicked Witch of the West. In which case, in which instance, she is not nearly the villain that she's made out to be in Wizard of Oz. Well, they co-opted it. Broadway co-opted it, turned it into a garish, god-awful musical. See, I don't do Broadway musicals either.
I don't either.
I like my theater. I don't do it in film. I don't do it on stage. Even if it's high comedy or even low comedy, I like there to be, with the exception of the Rocky Horror Picture Show and a couple of others, I like my theater straight, no chaser.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't live in a world where people break into songs about corn.
Yep. Yep. Lenny Bruce did a wonderful routine about Broadway musicals. Summed the whole thing up in about 30 seconds flat. I think the name of it was All Broadway Musicals Sound the Same, Especially the Baritones. And he recorded it. I don't know, if it's gettable.
Now this is this is nothing to do with symphonic music. I can sit there and sit there on a grassy hillside and have done so at a summer pops concert or a summer symphony, or go and sit in the dark theater and listen to it just bouncing off the walls, especially if there's good acoustics, and just completely come unglued by it. But opera?
Well, I'll tell you what. You get into Boris, and you're going to love it, Bob.
Well, then,
it's a piece of work that works. It's got a lot of depth to it. It's got, what you want in good theater. It hangs together. You can suspend your disbelief.
And that's a big part of it. That is,
we want theater that works, you know?
Yeah, because, it's I guess I lack a certain level of kink in my life or something, Richard. Because I cannot, some woman walks on in some piece of Wagner wearing a brass bulletproof bullet bra and a Viking helmet, and there's nothing in me that goes, oh yeah, that gets me hot.
Yeah,
just don't.
It's true. It's true. No, but you would, for one thing, if, for instance, Boris Godunov is a reworking of a Pushkin play. On the same.
So is that where the geniuses who came up with Rocky and Bullwinkle came up with Boris Badenov? Was it a play on Boris Godunov?
I don't think so. I mean, it was a play on the name, but that's it. The character has absolutely nothing to do. Boris Godunov is like an evil, czar, you know? And everybody in this opera is unlikable. There's only
then it's like multiplying negative numbers and you come up with a positive.
Well, everybody is unlikable, and there's only one singable aria in the whole thing, and it's a love duet between two scoundrels. It's a murky piece of work, and the only person who really knows what's going on is the village idiot. So I'm very fond of it. And, you know, I'm fond of it because it's great theater, and that the music carries the plot and the action, you know, the dialogue. The music is not subverted. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I actually do.
It's an opera that has depth, and it works. And the same is true of Plotsec. There probably are others that I don't like, but, you know, I especially dislike the whole wealthy social scene that's wrapped around opera.
Oh, yeah, and you got to have the optics, and you got to dress just so. And
right, the fur coats for the women. And
right. All that stuff that was so brilliantly satirized by the behavior of Frasier and Niles on the Frasier series of years gone past.
Yeah, and you probably have seen the Great Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yes. Welcome to my shop. Welcome to my shop. Let me clip your mop. Let me trim your top. Daintily. Daintily. Yeah, that would be the Rabbit of Seville.
Well, I was thinking of another one that was Wagner.
Oh, What's Opera Doc? Yeah. Why do we want to kill the rabbit? Yeah, sure. Yeah. On my top 10 list of my favorite films, there are two Marx Brothers films. One of them is Duck Soup, and the other one is Night at the Opera. Herr Gottlieb, Mrs. Claypool. Mrs. Claypool, Herr Gottlieb. Herr Gottlieb, Mrs. Claypool. Good. Now we have enough for bridge.
Yeah. But, you know, I was getting back to my original subject, which is can an artist afford to live in a place? My father was an artist, visual artist, and the time when he made his best living from his art, maybe the only time, was during WPA.
Well, because there was a...
He sold paintings to the government.
Yeah, and because there was a commitment to art then. You know, there was an NPR story some months back, Richard, about the brilliant, beautiful murals that adorned the Department of Justice. And those were done as make-work projects for a brilliant mural artist during the Depression.
Exactly.
I remember once as a young redneck hearing a lecture by John Houseman. And he talked about the profound influence that the Depression era theater projects had on the future, on what would become the future then of really great acting, whether it was Orson Welles or him or any number of brilliant Broadway and screen luminaries that would later become. And you know, I'd love to see some of that come out of all of this.
Boy, it's, I don't know. You know, the Republicans tried to kill all of this back in the 30s. I think they succeeded, right? Didn't they kill the WPA theater project?
Oh, they killed it all eventually.
Do you have do you have any public works projects remnants near where you live?
Oh gosh, yes. The entire state park system of West Virginia's roots lie in WPA and CCC.
Ah. What's that second one you mentioned?
CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps.
Oh, yeah. As well as some stuff around here, some stonemasons, Italian stonemasons, were put to work building, doing stonework in a park.
Oh, and that's the, you know, all of these state parks and such are done with brilliant native sandstone. It's gorgeous. And another thing is called to mind by that, Richard, and that is the fact that I don't know if you've seen the hissy that the right wing has been having. You know, he's gonna have a civilian army that he's gonna turn loose on anybody who doesn't agree with him, and they're gonna and we're all gonna be winding up in FEMA camps. You know, Glenn Beck has been preaching that stupidity, when in fact, what it is that
Barack Obama has talked about mandatory national non-military service. And he can't say WPA and he can't say CCC.
Well, he's saying mandatory.
Yeah.
Huh. What?
Or maybe voluntary. Maybe I'm bass backwards on this. But anyway, you know, something where you, you know, for instance, expand VISTA, expand AmeriCorps, expand the Peace Corps, which to me seems like a good thing. And maybe even create another entity. And if that, if part of that entity included music and visual arts and graphic arts, and writing and, well, bring me that times two. Hey, Richard, I'm sorry. This has been a wonderful conversation, a great way to end the week, but I'm out of time, brother.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
All right. Take care, Richard.
Bye.
Bye now. Richard calling from the Bay Area. I can't do that to Ben Burch. It's way too much work for him when I do extra innings, especially on a holiday weekend. So to those of you who are still blinking on hold, I apologize. Jump in early on Monday, and you'll get there. We'll make it happen. So thank you for a wonderful week, all of you. I hope you enjoyed it as much as did I. And we will be back Monday, rain or shine. Thunder seems to have let up a little bit here. And thanks to John Fox, our IT professional. Thanks to Peter Godbold. John Fox is our chief engineer. See, I'm a little dippy. John Fox is our chief engineer, our webmaster, our musician, our producer. Man of many hats. He's also the host of All Foxed Up Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Horn. Be there, else you won't know what you're missing, and you don't want to miss it. Peter Godbold is our IT professional, and he makes all the computers here work. And you may remember Peter's show, Strictly Confidential. I hope you do. From Strictly Confidential, you may remember a man by the name of Larry. Larry Sanders, Peter would refer to him as the world's most dangerous but somehow lovable DJ. Larry is very ill. This religious holiday weekend, whatever religion you happen to be, if you're the praying type, send up a prayer for Larry. He's very sick. He's been admitted this morning to a hospital with pneumonia and collapsed bronchial tubes. A team of five pulmonologists is caring for him. He's going to be there for a while. Please send your best hopes, best thoughts his way. And keep him in your thoughts, and Peter. Larry is awfully, awfully good people. And as soon as I have a room number and address, I will post that to the blog at headonradionetwork.com, maybe post it in the forum as well. But please keep Larry in your thoughts. Our thanks always go out to Ben Burch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org. He is trying to garner enough money to pay for a new computer that is desperately needed. And your help is the only way that happens. It is also 10 days into April, and we are far, far, far away from even nearing where we like to be this time of the month, any given month, in our fundraising efforts. So whichever way you care to do your help, please do if you can. To those who already have, thank you immensely. Special thanks, as ever, go out to Coal River Mountain Walk.